This episode of AVXL is recorded on November 29th, 2018. We're going to talk about, well, our Black Friday deals, like the 4K UHD HDR Matrix Repop, LG's updated chips coming in the 2019 TVs, JDS Labs' exquisite Atom amplifier, speaker picks for the Sonos amp, and so much more. Testing, 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah. Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home video and audio gear, no matter what your budget is. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Herron.
And I apologize. We should have done a couple more podcasts this month, but between the campfire madness, which was Northern California on fire, deadliest fire in California history.
Worst air quality I've ever experienced in this state for that long of a period of time.
And we were a fair piece from the actual 150,000 acres that burned.
True.
But the wind was blowing it offshore. These huge 40-mile-an-hour winds that were blowing, that were turning this fire into a hellish inferno, was blowing the smoke offshore, and then the regular prevailing breezes were blowing it back in through the Golden Gate.
Horrible.
It was even worse in Sacramento.
And the closer you were to it. Dangerous to the level of where you need a respirator to walk around.
Yeah.
Safely. I mean, anybody. Let alone if you have a breathing problem.
The first couple
like
days, the kids were wearing masks when we went outside. But I grew up in a household where dad smoked 3 packs a day and we had a wood stove. It just smelled like high school.
Just shove the filters in your nose.
And then by the third day, like I walked the dog and came back and was like, I'm going to wear a face mask now.
Yes.
N95 particulate masks are great because they keep the bits out of your lungs, but they don't do anything for the formaldehyde or any of the other stuff. But.
True. That smell of burning plastics and other things, too, in addition to that.
Well, the actual chemicals from the burning everything.
I always end up having flashbacks to like the early 90s, maybe the late 80s in Los Angeles, where you literally could taste the air on a daily basis and it burned your eyes.
Yeah.
And nobody was wearing masks back then, let me tell you. And I'd be curious to know what the 2.5 particulate count would have been back
epic.
In the...
It would have been epic.
It burned your eyes.
Well, there was lots of other stuff going
just
on. I mean,
clean-looking air.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't that clean.
Yeah, anyway. Well, anyway. It's not just particulate matter. It's some of the other... In any case, our let's...
We just tragedy.
To everyone who lost family or friends or loved one who lost their homes. We're talking about something in the neighborhood of 15,000 homes burning, several thousand other structures and commercial buildings. The last count I saw had they'd found 85 bodies.
It's going to go on for a while.
Yeah. And should you find out that a 2,000-degree inferno is burning through your community, don't stop to grab anything. Run.
Bail.
Preferably in your car. And that just...
Trust your gut. Just grab the important things, peoples, and bail.
Grab the people, try to grab the pets, and haul ass to the horizon.
Also, if you know people living in those kind of areas, too, that are prone to certain conditions like that, if you're aware of the news before they are, check on them.
Call them.
Yeah, give them a quick call. And encourage them highly to scoot. Of course, we say that now, and for the last 3-4 days, it's been steady raining, so... The fires are out for a while.
For now.
Now we have lightning storms.
We've had
I woke up to lightning this morning.
Which
that
is
kind of rare for California.
Yeah, Northern California doesn't get lightning to the point where some of the hardest people I know have seen lightning and freaked out while I'm standing outside. Because I grew up in, Pennsylvania, where we had thunderstorms
every
week.
Illinois, lightning and thunder are some of my favorite.
Oh,
anywho.
My goodness. We talk about technology on this show. And
we
while we're talking about, one thing to remind people of is if you do have like a big fire in your neighborhood or some serious air quality issues, it's always good to vacuum your gear out, change your filters, blow your filters out. For example, if you have a projector, some televisions occasionally have filters.
Heck,
clean your screen.
In-car air filter is going to get a change after this week after driving around with the recirculate the interior air and filter it as good as you can while I'm driving around air.
I have like a MERV 11 filter on my house that's got swapped out because it's
that became one of the key things we did around the house was to just close all the doors and run the air system just to let it go through the particulate filter and just keep that ran quite a bit during the craziness that was afoot. So good time to check and change those filters.
It was a little crazy. You picked up two of my favorite movies.
Cool.
Two of my least favorite movies.
Aw. One of your favorite. Two of your least favorite.
The Matrix and The Animatrix.
Oh, okay.
Are extraordinary.
Go.
I love those two movies. It's like drugs. It's never as good as your first time, but,
But among the various deals out there, I had no need for a low-cost TV, although I keep thinking about, damn, I wish I had found or been able to score one of those Vizio P-Series Quantum televisions for $1,400 at Costco. That was the one deal where I was like, damn, do I need a 65-inch TV? And I'm like, I have a couple of them. And I'm like, no, I really don't need another one, but damn, that's a good price. I pushed everyone toward looking at that. If it was near and dear and something on your wish list, that was a terrific price, and I look forward to seeing it hit that again, probably before the year's end. Anyway, yeah, The Matrix, 4K HDR trilogy. I just had to do it.
There's a lot of dark scenes in that movie.
Just in terms of, especially on something like an OLED, I bet you this is going to look freaking fantastic. These are scans of the original 35mm negative. The virtual effects shots are in 2K. So that, if you're a purist of 4K, that is one complaint, is that some of it does comprise 2K source material. However, it was all supervised by the original director of photography, Mr. Bill Pope.
Really?
And this is going to include on that set the HDR10 presentation, the Dolby Vision presentation. It's going to have Dolby Atmos audio, the wide color gamut, and particularly with the tweaking from the original director of photography, for me, that's just like a must buy. What is not to love about that? So,
well, the second and third Matrix movies, after the Animatrix.
You got to look at them in a different way.
I will, for you, I will watch them again.
I will point you to some YouTube interesting takes on what those were really about.
I will open my mind. I will watch the Matrix or the Animatrix all week long. For you, I will
just
want to
see that scene with Hell and the Merovingian in 4K HDR. That he was one of the, I don't know, something about that character I dug.
There's so many extraordinary moments in the second and third films, but it seems like they did all this amazing writing for the Animatrix, and then they turned around and went, oh, wow.
Well,
we have to produce two feature movies in 6 months, or we have to give them their money back.
I may have mentioned this, but okay, here is something I'm buying that I've clearly seen before in various formats, and now I compare, hopefully, what they're going to do with this, having it supervised by the DP. Compare that to what I just witnessed with The Big Lebowski in 4K HDR, where I was like, okay, this is just the Blu-ray.
Right.
I saw no visual difference overall to go, wow, this is the wide color gamut is, man, that rug looks good. Well, it really didn't come across as something like carefully done, and maybe there'll be another re-release.
I can think of some Coen Brothers movies where the extra dynamic range would do a lot for it.
I hear you.
But a lot of what they do...
True.
You know what I mean? Like
in terms of their style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Blood Simple, their first film, there's a movie that's...
I did not understand that. I saw it as too young of a child. I think it was like the week... it was in theaters when I saw it.
I fell in love with those guys the first time I saw it, and I just... Back when we were going to the art houses in Philadelphia.
I need to rewatch that because I wasn't in the mood to see that, and I got dragged into it.
Well, if you understand a complicated, messy adult relationship,
ended up not paying attention to it.
That's a movie that needs to be...
Yes.
Attention needs to be paid.
Scarface?
They just came out...
anyway.
They just came out with another Western for... It's on Netflix only. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Okay.
Which I watched, which is dark. Shock, Coen Brothers, and I actually really, really enjoyed it. I want to sit down and watch the entire thing in one sitting, but it ranges from campy to not so much like the Western genre itself. It ranges from super goofy and campy to super dark. And now that I think about it, they may actually be kind of covering the like 80 or 100 year evolution of the Western in a single film. It's a series of short stories or vignettes.
Kind of cool.
I'm gonna turn off the English major head right
Good
now.
Good perspective.
We didn't see any major sales in OLEDs, did we?
Not really. I mean, there were some slight discounts. LG announced themselves. It's like, oh, here's our Black Friday pricing. Mm-hmm. Dare you to find it cheaper. Only places I have truly found their TVs at the lowest prices is in-store deals.
Right.
At places like Best Buy and Fry's Electronics. And occasionally, they will just have the panel you want at a ridiculously low price. And how you can track that and keep track of that, short of just visiting these stores once in a while, I'm not sure. They have beaten all the online pricing I've seen for the most part, unless you're doing some sort of special buy or something. I'm not that hip to. I'm more on like, hey, what can I get this for without a lot of struggle at the lowest price? Get it shipped right to my door. Boom. Factory sealed box. Thank you.
We had an interesting viewer question talking about specifically shopping at Costco because they saw different models in Costco.
True. And always, you will.
Yeah, I mean, it happens at Best Buy. It happens at Costco. It's usually really subtle. It's usually not like the screen or the processing.
Look at the first few numbers in the model name you'll see at Costco, and they generally follow the same convention, except for maybe the last couple digits are different. And that's the difference. You won't, if you take the exact model number from a product at Costco, TVs in particular, and you look that up on the manufacturer site, you probably won't see that exact number, but something very close to it. Usually, instead of being the 8500, it'd be the 8506 or something like that. And that's the difference. And that goes back to Costco minimizing fraudulent returns and things like that as well. That's the main point, just to totally differentiate what you bought there from some other retailer, but not in any way typically a different display compared to what you would find straight from the manufacturer in that same series. And damn, did I see a lot of good deals at Costco short of like... Their OLED display always makes me laugh because I usually walk into Costco from a sunny day and I'm wearing sunglasses. And if you're wearing sunglasses and you look at that OLED right up front, if they're polarized sunglasses, the screen looks black until you turn your head sideways. Unlike any other OLED I've looked at from other manufacturers using similar LG panels, but I still smile at that. It's like, wait a minute.
Hold on.
Is that on? Oh, turn my head sideways. Oh, yep, it's on. Okay. Keep
good
walking.
To know. It's not what I thought. Oh, I finally got my acoustically transparent Elite screen that I've been waiting for.
Wow.
It turns out it was not...
About $500?
$427.
Okay.
Which is less than Amazon. I got a 100-inch photo. 100-inch.
Beautiful.
Acoustically transparent.
Retractable?
Free delivery. Yeah, motorized.
Oh, keep it out of the way when you're not using
it. Yeah. The only thing I would like it to have that doesn't have is the
screen.
Stretchers.
Oh, wait. No. Oh, tensioned.
Yeah. It is not a tension screen. You know, getting a tension screen would
couple hundred more
cost.
Bucks or more, depending on, yeah,
probably more.
Yeah.
Because when you go for acoustically transparent, the number of options is radically reduced and...
It becomes more critical, I find, if you're not going to do a tension screen to ensure that as you hang the screen that's there, it has to be perfectly level.
Yes.
So that the weight bar at the bottom is pulling straight down.
Otherwise,
and not,
it creates wrinkles.
Not even at a slight angle to where it's or pulling to the sides.
I have a level, sir.
Good.
And Elite ships a level in the box.
Or, if necessary, chain it to the ceiling so then you can adjust it on one side or the other if possible. So just something to keep in mind if you are dealing with...
For aesthetic purposes, it will be directly on the ceiling.
Slightly off.
Unfortunately, it is black, so it will be...
But beautiful, acoustically transparent. What is going to be your center channel?
ELAC loaned me a set of Debut 2.0, so the 5.1. It's
beautiful.
I
a good test subject.
Yeah, well, it's
oh, you got your new lamp module too, didn't you?
I did.
Oh, it's early Christmas for you.
Well, they were out and they were out and they were out. And what happened is I went to B&H Photo. And if you've never been to B&H Photo or Autorama,
they're great.
They're New York shops that have been around forever. Like I can remember going to 47th Street Photo or B&H Photo. They were kind of all up there. They ship nationally. If you get over, I think, $100, your shipping is free. And
cool.
Depending on where you are, I think it took 3 days. Amazon was like, we'll get it to you eventually. And B&H Photo was like, we'll get it to you Friday, and it'll cost less, and the shipping is free. And I was kind of like, oh, I'm down with that.
Have you installed it yet?
Just got it up and running. Now I have to finish reconfiguring the speakers.
You have the new lamp module in?
The new lamp module.
Okay.
I was laughing. I have the old lamp module because I was thinking like, oh, I should measure the before and after.
That would have been kind of cool.
Bias conception is that the new lamp is brighter.
Probably twice.
And it's certainly easier
although
to
we
see.
Don't see linearly the brightness. 2x brightness is really not 2x to our eyes, but measured-wise, I bet you it's 2x.
I'll put it to you this way. It's easier to see without having all the blinds down again, because that was the biggest change, because this projector is so much brighter than my first projector. Merely installing this projector made a huge difference in the amount of light reduction we needed to do.
Actually, the calibration I had originally done on that projector was with the lamp module at about 50 to 75 hours of use. So if that calibration's still there... By the time that module hits about 50, 75 hours, it should be closer than it is in that first 50 to 75 hours, I'm saying. Usually I find a new lamp module is going to be a little blue.
Right.
And it slowly burns that off over those first 50, 75 hours. And it's, then it settles down into a nice, steady, consistent output.
You know, the old bulb had 4,900 hours on it.
Good.
And it didn't explode.
It still work?
It still was still working.
I'd probably just keep it just in case.
I probably am.
Prepare to procure a new one, but...
Well,
save the old one.
Yeah, I am going to. What's nice, there's three things. One, especially with Epson, their bulbs are much more affordable. Like my first projector, I got like six, it was an Optoma. It was $600 refurbished. Replacement bulb was $270. The replacement bulb I had went maybe 2,000 hours before it exploded inside
right.
the projector. And, you know, so now I'm pretty adamant about getting factory bulbs only, which can be almost impossible depending on where you shop. For example, I will probably never buy a projection bulb
short of
on
paying
Amazon.
Retail prices, which yeah. can be pretty expensive.
But then, like, for example,
significant cost of a projector is yeah. that lamp module.
But the Epson, you know, a lot of the Epson bulbs now are $100 instead of $250. And you can get vetted sources from them, and it's an Epson box with an Epson seal on it. And that's a big deal to me.
I've always expressed to these companies that it's in their interest to make those more affordable, just because then it gives people more confidence mm-hmm. to use the product. And if they use the crap out of it, swapping yeah. in a new module is not an arm and a leg or a significant percentage of that original cost. So
yeah,
lamps in general are so standardized in that 300 watt range.
Well, the lamps are standardized. It's all the plastic
right.
and stuff around the lamp that changes.
You'd think it would be something similar to in the case of, like, I use uninterrupted power supplies with my computers. And this
right.
company I go with, they provide a free battery swap program, where
right.
at least you buy the new battery, but then the box it comes in is free return for the old one.
Right.
You'd think they would give you some kind of discount for sending in the old module
you'd
to
think.
Them. And then, hey, we'll factory refurbish it and sell
you
it.
You and your convenience.
Yeah, I'm a wishful
you
thinking.
You and your thoughtfulness. At this point, I'm just happy that the bulbs are
cool,
vastly more affordable. So
until you get into the high-end projection stuff. And then
well, you know, I'm not buying a $40,000 projector
no.
anytime soon.
Yeah, no. $5,000
selling my
neon lamps.
My house and getting my ass divorced.
The lamp is more than my car.
Oh,
hey.
A lot more.
Indeed. LG threw down some pre-CES info about their 2019 OLED televisions.
Ooh.
And this announcement was all but empty of actual specs, save for the updated Alpha 9 Revision 2 processor and our buddy Richard Lawler over at Engadget, who's, again, Engadget's doing the 2019 best of CES. He posted a beautifully succinct summary indicating that the only benefit, at least in terms of what LG's announcement was, may be the enabling of high frame rate, 120 hertz, via HDMI. Now, the current A9 chip used in most of LG's 2018 TVs supports high frame rate, plus 4K, plus HDR, but only via files that are served over its USB drive.
Right.
It looks like we are finally inching closer to HDMI 2.1 that brings the bandwidth for 8K video when those sources finally arrive, as well as support for 4K 120, plus the high frame rate, plus high dynamic range, plus the wide color gamut. And with CES only 6 weeks away, maybe we'll finally see some capable ports being added to these TVs to support these things hardly any of us can or do use.
Oh, man.
Hey, but being able to, having a TV at least that supports the input of 4K 120 with HDR and wide color palette, what you are exactly going to drive that with, well, you could do it probably with like a $5,000 PC or $5,000 worth of graphics cards, I should say. Maybe, but I would hope that when Microsoft and Sony are looking at their next-gen video game consoles, that's the target they're going to shoot for. You want to talk about wishful thinking right there. Yeah. A sub $1,000 gaming console that could do 4K 120 plus HDR and wide color gamut.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because
it's going to happen one day. I just don't think it's going to be for that next generation, for
no,
sure.
No, yeah, no. It's been interesting because between, you know, Tech Thing and Twitch, I've had a lot of questions about the RTX, the 20 series NVIDIA GPUs and the performance. And there's some interesting issues people seem to be having with them dying relatively young. It's anecdotal, but my friend Kyle over at HardOCP had one puke on him. I feel like it's a great time to be building a PC if you haven't been building one in a while. And it's also a little fraught if you happen to be spending
especially
all the money
on NVIDIA
on a GPU.
Side. I understand that. I say with any electronics product, you do not want that first batch.
No.
Let it simmer down. Wait for the first sale. Then jump in. by then, I guarantee you, it's going to be a far smoother experience. And that applies to so many things, be it cell phones, to graphics cards, to you name it, any kind of pricey electronic device. Let it marinate.
There's
let,
nothing
let some
wrong
driver updates with... come out. Let some initial hardware design issues be flushed out.
Let the firmware be updated.
Anyway.
I'm a big fan of waiting for firmware updates.
Like I had to get that new phone. Like an idiot. If I had looked at the calendar, I would have realized Black Friday was coming up. And it would probably be cheaper on that day. Like
there
a
were
month
some
later.
Insane. So. Google was...
Anyway.
Google was... yeah, Google just didn't care about making money on Black Friday.
Oh,
their
I'm
margins
sure
are so
making,
huge
yes.
that they had a lot
That's
left
what
over.
I'm thinking.
Well, they were selling.
They get you hooked.
I digress.
Anywho, me too.
JDS Labs. We've talked about their gear. You know, the Element headphone amplifier, their EL DAC, their EL amp. John over there, the lead engineer, gave himself a challenge.
What was this challenge?
To make the best delete expletive amp he could make for the least amount of money.
Okay.
So
talking about component style.
Yeah, it's
put it in the rack.
It's a small. I apologize, I left it at home. It's a small black box, knob on the front, headphone jack on the front, 3.5 millimeter RCA inputs on the back, and then RCA outputs, so it acts as a preamp.
Nice.
And it's $99, and it's fundamentally flawless.
Perfect.
You know, they're a little back-ordered right now because they've been getting a lot of super reviews. One of the big ones.
People want it?
Yeah, well, Audio Science Review did a... Audio Science Review is a semi-anonymous person who may or may not be Northwest Audio guy who does a ton of audio testing. He has some high-end audio testing gear. He does some pretty severe, some simple but some pretty severe looks at audio products, looking at the noise floor, jitter, and the quality of
super detailed specs
output.
About what goes into making a good amplifier or
and
audio related.
When you look at like signal to noise ratio, higher is better. I'll put the Audio Science Review link in the show notes. But this has like 124 dB compared to some vastly more expensive amplifiers and some comparable amplifiers, which are like 112, 107, 102 dB. You know, some amplifiers that cost, you know, considerably more money.
Would you use this just as a headphone amplifier primarily, or would this also be something you could throw in if you needed one or two extra channels on a home AV receiver?
It would work in either of those situations. Okay. For me, it's particularly compelling because I run full-size bookshelf speakers and my headphones on my desktop.
Oh,
so
do it
I
all
could
with
use
one.
This exactly. So I could use this as a headphone amplifier and a preamp output to the amplifier.
That's really cool, actually. That is the one downside of my current setup is that it's pretty much driven to headphones only.
Yeah.
And if, for the most part, I do that just for making everyone happy in the household.
Yeah. I do a lot
and,
of music
for
listening
privacy
in the wee small hours.
I don't want to hear half the crap that comes out of my computer, especially websites that just start autoplaying garbage. But I hear you.
But it was
nice.
Looking
How much?
At the specs, it's $99.
All right.
And when you look at the frequency response for this from like 10 hertz, which is obviously inaudible, to like 30-something thousand hertz,
like
which is also
amp.
Inaudible. It's a ruler straight flat line.
Nice. Well built for $100.
Yeah, it's a plastic case. It's not the CNC milled stuff that they usually do over at JDS Labs.
Mod it if you want.
One of the things John said is he learned a lot designing his last couple of amps and component arrangements on the PCBs and some of the stuff. And he just spent a lot of time testing and refining and testing and refining. The PCBs are made in the United States. They're soldered together in the United States. The company runs out of Southern Illinois right next to St. Louis.
Cool.
So if you've been thinking about buying a headphone amp, this should be on your short list because it's super clean. It's $99. You can also use it as a preamp, and it'll switch between the headphones and the preamp outputs.
HDMI input?
No.
Or I mean, excuse me, USB.
No, just 3.5. It's not a DAC. It's just an amplifier. That
gotcha.
Was like my one complaint.
Gotcha.
Was that they didn't release the $99 Atom DAC to go along with it. When they do release the $99 Atom DAC, this will be an impossibly good combination to beat.
Gotcha.
Just saying.
So all right.
Shout out to the crew over at JDS. For that
sweet.
One. Also, there's been some activity on the digital audio player front.
I bet with the holiday season coming up.
Yeah, well, some people think this is a dying breed. And then I also know people that are still running iPod Classics and have been running them for years and years and years and years. Something else I got my ears on and my paws on this week, Aktivo's CT10, which is a digital audio player built on Android, can stream Tidal. And
Is that the doohickey laying on the table?
That's the doohickey you were listening to laying on the table. So
I like that thing.
Activo, like Astel and Current, is an offshoot of iRiver. There's a core module with most of the sort of digital audio kit inside of the Activo CT10 that was designed and engineered by Astel and Current. Astel and Current made the first really badass dedicated FLAC audio player. It sold for like $700.
Right.
I want to say that was like 8 years ago, 10 years ago now. It bleeds. I am old.
Who listens to FLAC?
I do.
Yeah.
MP3. MP3 decoding's cheap.
But it combined a simple interface, FLAC playback, the ability to do high resolution audio, which is not a super big deal to me, but is a super big deal to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But that was like $700.
Right.
So this sells for $300, which is a lot of money until you realize that most Android-based digital audio players that can stream are in this, you know, a year ago were in the $700 price range. There were certainly some less expensive ones, but some of them had what I will affectionately call atrocious firmware issues.
It's a compact puck with a nice screen on it.
Yeah, and it takes a micro SD card. There's like 16 gig on board, which is enough for several minutes of listening. But it'll take a 400 gigabyte SD card, which is the largest SD card made currently. And there's a good chance that it'll go up to 2 terabytes once in the days sometime in the future when they actually offer such massive cards.
I think my favorite thing is that volume knob.
Yeah.
It has a physical knob, and it has superb granularity.
Yes.
So, man, you can find just the level you
if
want.
You're frustrated by the 64, clicks between,
yes,
I can't hear it, and, oh, my God, my ears, they are bleeding.
3 is okay. 4 is too loud. 3 still is okay.
This has a lot more.
Yes.
A lot more range, dynamic range.
It encourages you to spin it, which I many advantages.
This thing can play just about any audio file.
Good.
You know, I want to say like AVI FLAC, WMA, MP3, AUG, APE, ALAC, APE, DFF, DSF, MQA, if you're into MQA, although I don't know where you're going to get MQA files to download on this. Tidal, which is one of the only sources of MQA, will only stream MQA when you're using the desktop app. DSD 64128256, but it does DSD to PCM conversion, so that may or may not count depending on how big of a DSD geek you are. I don't own any DSD files, so I can't help you there. And if you're a DSD kind of gal or guy, you can feel free to email ask@avxl.com. Like Robert pointed out, it feels good in the hand. It sounds excellent. It drove some of my heavier headphones, not to ear-bleeding volumes, but to certainly acceptable volumes. My one kind of big complaint is there's a 3.4-inch touchscreen, which is manageable, but the keyboard on it, so if you want to search for an artist on Tidal, took me some practice to figure out where to offset my thumbs to be able to type things into it. Now, I have large thumbs, so I handed it to someone with much smaller thumbs, and they had the same problem. But once I kind of got used to how to type on it, it wasn't too bad. I would like a bigger screen on it. I also wish it was UBC instead of micro USB. Not that there's anything wrong with micro USB, except it doesn't seem to hold up as well as USB-C does.
I am a fan. I'm an instant convert.
You know, not having to, not having up on the USB is really nice. Support for Spotify or other streaming services would also be nice. It currently only supports Tidal. There's not a lot of sort of high-end audio services, but I think Spotify Premium is really good. You can plug it into your desktop by a USB cable and use it as a headphone amp or a DAC.
Very cool.
If you don't need streaming services or just want to play your FLAC files, there's a lot of options out there. The Fio M7 is getting some really good reviews. It's under $200, claims 20 hours of battery time. That's one that should be on your short list to look at. And I got to say, I like digital audio players. Yes, I can use my phone for this, but I really like having no distractions and a focus on the audio. So something to consider. A little bit more battery life out of this would be nice. I think I'm getting 10 to 12 hours out of it. So something to think about.
That is freaking nice.
I like it.
I do too.
Oh my goodness.
We
got a great email from David, who emailed ask@avxl.com. Quote, a while ago, both of you mentioned putting black electrical tape over equipment, bright LEDs, and the like. There is a good solution that allows you to still see the state of those lights. They make something called light dims. They reduce light output by 50% or so. I had no idea these existed.
Oh, good.
They're
little
up on Amazon.
Stick-on sunglasses for those
filters.
Filters for those
filters.
Bright lights.
So that's
that's a nice option, actually. Although I would say, maybe I'm not using the thickest of electrical tape. Actually, it might not even be electrical tape.
I don't know what I have.
No, I cut like tiny little squares out, so there's barely some light bleed around it. But no, I think this would be a better deal, because then you could, with the filter on top, you could still at least see some indication of it being on or off easily, but still tame it nicely.
They obviously feel that many of us have out of control LED situations, because for $5 you get 100 of these little stickers. They peel off, they peel on. They have large rectangles for the front of your cable modem. They have smaller dots for the front of AV equipment.
Good.
You know, it's
most TV manufacturers, I'm pleased to say, have gotten hip to doing this right, so that when TVs are on, generally there won't be an LED on the front. Only when you turn it off do you have the indicator light. And you also have the option in the menus typically to just disable that altogether, especially if it's in front of you, either in your AV rack or it's the display itself somehow. Oh, indicator lights. Those don't belong. Well, not visible. When you're watching content.
Well, some of the displays are just atrociously bright, and when they're undimmable, that's kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, indicator lights, no mercy. None.
Light dim them all. David also says, I bought myself some speakers that are due to arrive on Wednesday. Clips are on sale up to 50% off. Mine are costing me something like $750 off, so $1,600 instead of $2,400, give or take.
Nice.
It's also, there's been some really good speaker sales. Kef has been playing around with dropping their LS50s down to $999. Elax Unify UB5 is on sale for $350 right now, down from $500, which is the usual price. They did a Black Friday sale, and I apologize. I missed my chance to tweet this out. The Debut 2.0, which are their new entry-level speaker, they were down to $150, down from $300, which is a smoking deal. On a set
you know,
of speakers.
It sounds like speakers are one of those product categories that are, man, if you're looking, the Black Friday and other sales similar to that are the prime days to really consider pulling the trigger, especially with half-off deals like that in some cases on great gear.
Great gear.
Great gear.
Great gear. We got another email from Alan who says, I recently got a Sony STR-DN1080 AV receiver and it transmits to my wireless Bluetooth headphones. It seems to need to pair each time, but it works. I got it mainly because I can stream DSF content to it that I've ripped from SACDs. I'm not sure I can hear the difference between SACDs and regular CDs, but it's a nice ability to have. So Bluetooth out is available on at least some Sony AVRs.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I think the audio compression over the Bluetooth probably going to eliminate whatever awesomeness you might have between a CD and an SACD.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't really have a lot of...
I wouldn't be using wireless anything to do critical listening.
Yeah.
If you're trying to seriously compare.
Yes.
You may hear Bluetooth, some differences.
Bluetooth is really good and Aptx is really good.
True.
I do, yes. When everyone is asleep and the house is quiet.
I'm curious to see what Sony's using then for their Bluetooth output. I bet you they have Aptx support and other, maybe
no,
even.
Sony does. Sony went their own way. Sony has LDAC, which technically has fatter streams for more.
You get
awesome.
Some sound. That's it.
Okay, fine. Well, we'll talk Bluetooth and Aptx and LDAC. My issue with LDAC
I
want
to dig into to see what the specs are on that.
There aren't that many things that support LDAC.
Right.
Although LDAC is an option inside of Android, but only if the manufacturer implements it. In any case, I would say if you really want to hear the difference between those CDs, like Robert said, between the CDs and the SACDs, if you can hear a difference, I would not send them wirelessly to your headphones. So. But thanks for the heads up that the Sonys offer Bluetooth headphone outputs.
I love it. We also had a listener named Aaron email us, ask@avxl.com. Hey guys, I heard Patrick mention the importance of protecting hearing on here and his chats on beginner audiophile. I run a lawn care business and have always just used earplugs for protection. But I would like to have something that I could use to listen to music and not blow out my hearing from either the music or the equipment. Sorry this isn't AV related. But it is. But with your knowledge of headphones, I thought I'd ask if you had a recommendation for something that would work well in my application while also providing high quality sound. Thanks, guys. Love the show. Signed, Aaron.
I love this question.
Yeah, I'm still rocking my E4Cs from 2005.
The Atomotics?
No, the Shures.
Oh.
Like ancient.
Those are pretty nice, though.
But I have a bag I picked up when I bought them. I bought like 500 of the foam squishy sound. They're just like earplug material,
right?
But they're disposable because earplug material ends up getting saturated with oils and waxes and things, and it become less
filthy. They don't slough.
When you squeeze it, they just immediately expand back out rather than that slow. And you need to get it in properly. Mm-hmm. But having those as replaceable tips like that, I find that those are as good as some of the, not the very best earplugs I use for just straight up sound protection, but it's amazing how it can drown out everything around me.
there are earbuds that are kind of open-backed or have sort of a bass port or built out of materials that seem to transmit more noise than they block, right? So it absolutely depends on the earbud.
Don't buy those.
Yeah, don't buy those to protect your hearing. First of all, I want to say, Aaron, it's great that you're protecting your hearing because, you know, as a man of a certain age, I was running a chainsaw, you know, at the age of 13 with no ear protection and no eye protection. And I generally didn't wear gloves because all the manly men in Pennsylvania didn't wear gloves when they were running chainsaws. So the fact that you are recognizing that you are in an environment, for example, if you fly 40 hours a week or 20 hours a week, you should probably be wearing earplugs because hearing damage is cumulative. It piles up over time. If you have short bursts, your villi can kind of sometimes stand themselves back up when they've been blasted flat.
Take care of your ears.
Yeah.
If you know you're walking into something loud or it's going to be loud, even for brief moments.
Or if you have kids that are going to concerts, spend $20 to get them the super cool audio earplugs that don't screw up the audio as badly as the little foam earplugs do. So they'll actually wear them because they can still hear all the cool stuff in the music.
Especially indoor concerts.
Oh my goodness. And
like 6 hours of speed metal.
Yeah, and make sure, between that. And
that'll keep you ringing.
The biggest cause of hearing damage for young people today is just having their cheap-ass earbuds turned up to 100%.
Oh, that's been going on for decades. So
it's gotten worse in the last decade.
You're talking about
something in the neighborhood of 25%.
Well, just my DJ friends, and now it's like the general public.
Yeah. No. Hearing damage is nothing new. But like 25% of people under 18 having permanent hearing damage.
You have to do something. Yeah. So, and it's going to be an in-ear design. It's going to be something that provides.
There are over-ear. There are in-ear. There's a lot of stuff you can do. Also, you need to be careful that you don't turn up. If you're sitting on a riding lawnmower and it's stupid loud. You don't want to turn up your earbuds so loud that now the music is damaging you instead of the sound of the engine that you're sitting on. But
that used to be my experience riding public transit here in the Bay Area on the quote-unquote BART line. There used to be sections of the track
that went
130 decibels.
Yeah.
And the impulse is, I'm just going to turn up my headphones louder. And it's like, no.
So what you want to do is you want headphones or earbuds that attenuate or block a lot of noise. One of my favorites I've literally used these while grinding metal in a machine shop.
Okay.
Edemotic in-ears are amazing. They claim like 37 dB of attenuation. Ratings measures them at negative 32 dB. That is better than any...
That's a good earplug.
That is almost better than anything you will buy for hearing protection off the rack from anywhere. That's way over the top.
That's better than any pair of earmuffs
just
for straight audio protection for the most part, unless you're getting some specialized ones.
I mean, but both Robert and I,
I wear earplugs a lot.
Yeah,
so
we shoot, and a lot of times you'll see us, we will have the foam earplugs and then
the earmuffs over that,
in part because a lot of the earmuffs aren't very good, and in part because when you're standing next to somebody who's shooting a .44, the physical blast is causing you to list over. Those are spectacularly loud, especially in an enclosed cinder block room.
If you're flinching from pain from a sound, it's too freaking loud.
Yeah.
And you need something. So. Yeah. Good. Does something like Edemotic include different size tips?
They have almost all of these are going to have different size tips.
They come with like a kit.
Yeah. You need to find one that fits and that seals properly. The Edemotics, the ones that do the incredible amount of attenuation, are long silicone tips with multiple ribs. So you kind of pull your ear back and jam this thing in.
The nice thing, though, also about using something like an in-ear design, and I used to do this when I worked in a manufacturing job way back in the day, I would put those on and then put my earmuffs over that.
Yes.
So then I could really turn down the volume and still hear everything perfectly and have like that double set of protection going as well.
I mean, think about it.
That really does isolate you. So if there's a chance that you could be in an environment where you need to hear a noise coming, be aware.
That is absolutely something that's problematic. I am kind of comfortable. I walk the dog at like 120 beats per minute at a fairly brisk pace.
Right.
I am kind of comfortable walking around
on sidewalks
with headphones. I will
parks.
Not cycle. I will not snowboard. I will not bicycle in the city. I will not walk around San Francisco because I want to at least possibly hear the Tesla that is about to run my ass over because it's running a red light.
So quiet.
Shure's SE215 and 315 offer like negative 24 dB or negative 20 dB of attenuation.
And like I said, I'm a super fan of their disposable tips too.
Yeah.
Get a bag of those and they last you for years.
I'm not a huge fan of RTINGratings.com's headphone reviews because they seem to be grading all headphones and earbuds against all other ones, which is an interesting concept. But
they're data collectors. So
their data is fantastic.
They eventually seem to come up with, okay, how do people want to use our data? Here's how we'll start presenting it once we figure out. We just have to collect everything first.
Yes.
We got 8 million devices here.
Yeah.
And it's, you collect everything. We'll sort it later.
They're making some interesting decisions in how they rate products based on how they interpret that data. And in some cases, I don't think it's appropriate because you're not going to try to use this kind of crazy headphone for travel or something.
The numbers are good.
Just their numbers
not
are
necessarily
amazing.
Directly comparable.
Their television reviews are amazing. If you go into their headphone tests, they do noise isolation, passive and active, which I think is really smart. Using an in-ear that does a lot of attenuation, and then I would put earmuffs over that. I have no issues with that. It
exactly would.
Just as Robert points out, maybe when you're in a quiet place, figure out what is a reasonable volume for you, and then don't turn it up higher than that when you are sitting on top of the machinery, just so you don't blast your eardrums to the center.
In general,
of your skull.
A good, well-sealed in-ear encourages you to turn it down. It's surprising.
Yeah. And there's a lot of good wireless options. It's
really?
Not well, there are
headphones?
A couple.
Or earbuds?
Headphones.
Okay.
But I want to say like Sony's WH-9000, which is a fantastic, especially if you buy it at Costco, you can get it at Costco on sale for like $180. It's like -17 dB attenuation. So not
maybe for
huge.
A string trimmer.
Yeah.
Or something not too crazy.
Maybe
loud.
Not for the big giant lawnmower.
Not for long period. I would rather have more protection too. But if you're using headphones, you could put earplugs in and have the headphones over those.
Ideally with the Atomotics and then set of earmuffs over that. That's gonna block all the noise.
If I'm looking for ear protection, I'm going for something in ear that's isolating me that way.
It's a good thing. And then swivel your head a lot so you don't run over any children.
Yeah.
Anyhow, hey, great question, Aaron. Thanks for sending that one in. Sebastian emailed ask@AVXL. Hey, Patrick, hope all is well with you and the family. Now that we can breathe, we're actually kind of delighted. He says, as discussed with the release of the 2018 Sonos amp, it brings up a conversation surrounding the perfect speaker or sub pairing for what we hope is a little gem of an amp. He says he's been looking at the KEF LS50 mixed with a Cube 10B or the Q350 or 150. The other idea was to go down the B&W path with their 685 bookshelf or the Klipsch R51M. Adding to the complexity, I have an industrial-themed apartment, so the copper cones and the LS50 and Klipsch really caught my eye. Would be great to hear your views. I'm open to any ideas. Regards, Sebastian.
I love Klipsch's copper cones for whatever reason.
Well, and the
KEF just the design style. It's just something that's like, wow, that just looks cool.
There is an aesthetic there.
They sound damn good too. But
yeah, the LS50, I got to say, are outstanding. They are a fantastic speaker. If I had lots of money, I would own the KEF LS50 wireless, which is about $2,000, which is a fantastic. They built the amplifiers and the streaming and the DACs all into a pair of LS50 speakers.
Klipsch is in Indianapolis, I think, and they invited us
out Arkansas there. Originally.
Oh, okay. And they were one of the companies that said, you should come out and check out our anechoic chamber sometime. And I'm like, those are disturbing rooms to be in. But anyway.
They make me feel like my head's about to collapse.
So you like KEF's LS50s?
KEF's LS50, hands down, are one of the best speakers out there.
Okay.
I also really like ELAC's Unify UB5. One of the first things I said when I heard the Unify UB5, which I bought out of my own pocket to put in my living room, was like, wow, these are like the LS50s, but less expensive. If you could swing it, I would probably go for a SHU subwoofer or an RSL speedwoofer or an SVS sub in place of the KEF sub, because these are subwoofer-only manufacturers for the most part. I mean, SHU does some speakers, RSL does some speakers, but the RSL speedwoofer is this insane bargain of a subwoofer. SHU is legendary. SVS is legendary. I would probably get my sub from a subwoofer-only manufacturer just because they're so badass. Some folks, some of the reviews I'm seeing of the new BMWs say they're a bit bright. I found it pretty impressive during the short period of time I got to hear them at Cedia back in September. It may be how bright your room is or how much, you know, how many curtains or how much diffusion you have.
Maybe consider a 5-channel setup and get that 0.1 from a specialist in the 0.1.
Well,
why not? Yeah. That's what it sounds like you're saying.
Yeah,
it's like, hey, look,
for the subwoofer,
those handful of companies that do subs really, really well.
Yeah, I'm really, because I
save a little money getting the other speakers. That way you're not including a matching sub aesthetically pleasing, but it's not going to give you the sound quality you want. So,
well, if you want to, I mean, SVS makes some prettier subs, I think, than RSL or SHU, but
you're not going to see it anyway. You're going to hide it in the corner behind the couch.
Well, you're going to hide it wherever it sounds best.
But yes, you should, but where in reality?
Oh my goodness. And
where is your sub? Oh, it's here behind the couch. It's like, okay.
It's under the coffee table.
Yes.
Sonos, it looks like Sonos decided to offer the amp for sale early because they weren't going to sell it until February, but it's been up for sale. It's sold out and it's up for sale again on their website. I have not ordered one personally, but they say you could buy it.
Okay.
I was a little concerned about, because the only spec they had on it was for their 125 watts per channel at 8 ohms. I asked, and they said it's 250 watts per channel as their 4 ohm power rating. So apparently they have enough power supply in that to feed 4 ohm speakers safely. I also asked if there's a set crossover point or a low pass filter for the subwoofer output, if it's going to be adjustable, where the control is going to be. And they said it will be adjustable and you can control that through the Sonos app, which is a big deal for me, depending on the subwoofer and the speakers.
Nice.
I also asked about Sonos TruePlay because TruePlay is an interesting DSP adjustment they do. You walk around your room with the appropriate phone.
Oh,
it does some measurements. Yeah.
I absolutely love that. And it'd be nice if it was on Android.
Yeah.
So it's an Apple only, an iOS only feature, which if you happen to have one of these systems and you are in a house that's Android only, just get a friend over.
Yeah.
And install that Sonos app on their iOS device and then
run it.
Run it.
TruePlay is currently, they said, only available on standalone Sonos speakers, but they are going to have some Sonos architectural speakers made by Sonance. And when the amp is connected to those speakers, you will be able to run TruePlay on those. So
that could be pretty cool.
One last thing before we go. I want to give a shout out. If you've never seen it, The Princess Bride.
Stop what you're doing and go watch that movie.
Yeah, really. For no other reason.
If you've been on this planet, I guess you could have been born after the fact. And yeah, never mind.
In any case, I rewatched this in honor of the passing of William Goldman, who wrote the novel and wrote the screenplay for The Princess Bride. I'm going to call it a family-friendly cult classic.
Yeah.
It's just a great movie if you're an adult or a kid. It's also a sign of how much range Robin Wright has. This may have been her first appearance in a movie or close to it. I mean, she's amazing in House of Cards and Wonder Woman. It's kind of crazy to see her and Cary Elwes when they were like 12.
Very cool.
They were not 12, but they were very, very young.
No,
you might also know Mr. Goldman.
Adults.
Yeah. Might also know Mr. Goldman from his Oscar wins for Best Screenplay. He got those for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and All the President's Men. He also wrote Papillon.
Papillon.
I knew one of us knew French. Papillon, The Great Waldo Pepper, Marathon Man, A Bridge Too Far, all of which are very dark movies of the 70s when everybody was kind of down on the human spirit. Maverick, The Ghost in the Darkness, which came much, much later, I want to say in the 90s. The Ghost in the Darkness has so many problems, but it's such an absolutely fantastic film to watch.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
I know nothing about it. I will take a look.
These are movies that go back to me being a child and watching them with my dad.
Wait, Marathon Man, I'm pretty sure I've seen.
Marathon Man. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid is still fantastic. I just want to cut the song Bicycle Montage in the middle.
Not a purist.
Yeah, well, everything else is, you know, I don't think the song, well, it, you know, everybody's got their own edits they'd make to their favorite movie or not. Just a fantastic collection of writing and a loss. This is a guy. His movies have meant a lot to me over the years, and I've been thinking about that as various people pass that to give a shout out for some of the works they've done. So we haven't done a lot of that, or maybe we've done it occasionally. Aretha Franklin comes to mind, but there've been some younger deaths, I think, in Hollywood that have been surprising and kind of a bummer. I'll talk about one of those next week just because he is part of so many of my favorite movies, and I'll just tease it with that.
There you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is AVXL. AVXL.com is the place to go to find the RSS feed links, or just search for AVXL on your favorite podcatcher.
There.
Yeah. Robert Heron could be found at, is it HeronFidelity.com?
HeronFidelity.
HeronFidelity. You can find me at AVXL.
My work in progress website.
Or TEKTHING, techthing.com.
Yeah, baby.
And possibly, I might actually have, by the time this is posted, I might actually have PatrickNorton.com back up and running.
Nice.
I have a pile of audio reviews that are going up there if you are a fan of the written word. And if you are a fan of this podcast, you can do us a favor and help support us by going to patreon.com/AVXL. Kick a little bit of change in on a monthly basis to help defray our costs and make it easier for us to make the time to make the podcast. And again, I apologize. We did not do as many episodes as we probably should have this month, but Northern California was on fire and my wife got sick and things were kind of crazy.
It shut down this town for a few days, especially during the worst parts of it.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's just too difficult to ask like hundreds of thousands of people to go to work when the air quality requires a respirator. Well, honest to God, people do it all the time in certain countries in Asia.
Yes. I mean, I consider
but
myself...
we're all pre-equipped with respirators. Stylish ones.
Oh, yes. There are stylish options. They were all sold out. You can now buy masks again. Well, I consider myself a bit of a hard ass. And I went out without that mask on Thursday morning. And that's when the particulate count skyrocketed. And I basically came home, tried to vomit, sat on the couch for 2 hours and drank water. And then nearly killed myself with a podcast. And I was just like...
Yep.
Can we podcast next week? Rob's
Man,
like, yes.
I was just like, it was affecting the pets. It was just horrible, and I'm glad it's over. So
when your pet is randomly gagging, you know things have gone horribly wrong with
you. You
want
to take them out to exercise, but not... Although I did see a person who actually got their dog a gas mask. And I always forget that there are those devices or a air filtering mask for pets.
It's one of those things you have to purchase in advance because there's not a large market for those until Northern
military.
California is on
hire. I think they're like military-based designs or something. I don't know, but I was happy to see that, both the owner and the pet appropriately.
I saw pet-based N95 masks. I have not seen the doggy gas masks.
Special forces stuff. I don't know.
There's things that I'm tempted to Google for, but I am slightly afraid to Google, and that just made the list.
Oh. Hey, I'm going to throw out one thing on YouTube, which I am supremely addicted to anyway. The South Main Auto Repair Channel.
Really?
It's just wholesome. It is it's just a pure delight watching that family do their thing. Some New York-based auto mechanic who's just got a great life going, and it's just fun to watch him, and he's damn good.
Oh, cool.
He's good at troubleshooting stuff, but that's not even half of it. Just the family interaction.
A talented mechanic is a wonder.
Oh, but it's so nice. I don't know. I find nothing negative there ever. So if you're looking for something that's a little more positive to view, that's a good channel to go binge watch.
I feel that way about Flight Test.
Yeah, things like that.
The boys have fallen in love with Flight Test.
I've been watching a lot of first-person view drone racing, and in particular, the evolution of these types of drones, in particular over the last year, and how good that video system has become for streaming that video from a flying drone to give you that first-person view like you're on it. Guy named Mr. Steele, I'm sure a lot of people know that. There are a lot of good channels out there, but he's one of those other people, too, that is a good, positive voice and... very little BS, and I just love those kind of channels are what I'm drawn to. I don't watch regular TV. I do have an antenna hooked up for that odd occasion I need to watch a live sporting event or something, and it's easier to do it just by flipping over to the antenna. But
oh my goodness,
man, I'm a streamer. Ain't many cords to cut. Just keep my internet connection flowing. That's all I really need. Speaking of which, my beautiful Ubiquiti Wi-Fi home mesh router. I guess it would be Amplify. I always want to say Ubiquiti because that's the primary company, but the Amplify HD router, that thing just continues to chug along, and it just received another update that just keeps it rocking. Zero complaints there.
They do nice work. I've got a Netgear. I've tested all the mesh routers. I've
friends and family using the Amplify setup with no issues. So I still want it to auto update. That's the one thing it doesn't do yet. They haven't enabled that option where you could at least enable it if you want to. I understand why they don't, but
it would be nice.
Yeah,
but I don't think Netgear Orbi's auto updates.
It gets me to use their app to check. It's like, oh, maybe everything is great. That's the nice thing about their app. When everything's fine, it just goes, oh, everything's great.
Yeah. Oh man,
you don't have to look any further.
I gotta say,
tangents.
The Incredibles 2 Blu-ray is pretty delightful. I know it got knocked a little bit on the Blu-ray.com. Blu-ray.com review because they didn't offer
what movie?
The Incredibles 2.
Oh,
is out on Blu-ray.
Sweet. I didn't catch that in the theater. Surprise.
It was good in the theater. It's fantastic in the living room.
It's one of those where it's like, man, if you were a fan, you'd probably want to see it. So,
well, it was 14 years between The Incredibles and The Incredibles 2, and of course, my 6-year-old is like, when's The Incredibles 3 going to come out? Probably about 14 years, buddy. How long is that? Well, longer than your big brother's been around.
Yep.
One of the complaints they had was Disney didn't do Dolby Atmos on the Blu-ray, but the UHD has Dolby Atmos soundtrack, but the Blu-ray only has DTS HD 7.1 surround.
Trying to upsell you. make you get that disc.
Do us a favor, email ask@avxl.com. If you currently have an Atmos setup in your house and what your favorite Atmos titles are. I'd like to get a feel for how many people are out there on the leading edge of audio playback. If you've got a 4K system, if you're looking for flawless titles to display that. So we start squeaking towards the end of the year and the pre-CES 2019 FUROSC.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
You have to come to CES so we can do the podcast from CES.
I'm telling you.
Bathed in the glow. We can do it bathed in the glow of one of those crazy...
There will be TVs to see and display technology I need to see firsthand. And probably most importantly, great people that I just need to reconnect with every year. And it's good to see people in person.
I've known these people since I was a child.
And that is the biggest display nerd gathering of the universe. So
yeah,
one of them at least. So at least here in North America where I call home. So...
There you have it, people.
Yeah.
AVXL.com is the website.
Do
I'm Patrick Norton.
I am Robert Aaron.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.